I'm Carol Black, and I write mysteries set in Paris.
You're a writer, a mystery writer, and you've been mystery writing for how long?
I started in 1993-94.
Yeah?
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
I always go by how old my son was, so he got into preschool, so that's when I started writing. I sold my book when he was in third grade.
Yeah.
And it was published when he was in fifth.
All right.
And now he's living and working in New York City.
It's great. You didn't start writing then. You had to. What's your first earliest memories about writing?
Oh, I was always a reader.
Yeah,
it was my family was big readers. My father was just always reading. So
and,
we grew
and you
up.
Grew up where?
I grew up Woodside near Palo Alto.
Yeah, yeah.
30 miles from here. Yeah, I mean, and my dad would read us stories on Sunday, and when my grandfather came out, he would tell stories. And I really realized now that my grandfather was a real storyteller, even though we didn't know at the time, you know.
Uh-huh.
And people, we didn't watch TV so much, and we just sit around at night. I mean, I know this sounds archaic, like we're campfire people, but, you know, in those days, you know, you did do that, you know. And I don't know. I think there was always people telling stories in my family.
Do you remember any particular story?
Oh, yeah. My grandfather was full of them. He grew up in Nebraska. He remembers a man who, when he was a little boy, so, and my grandfather's, I mean, this must be 1890s, I don't know. As a little boy, he remembers. Yeah, he remembers in the town in Nebraska, there was an old man who had been scalped by the Indians as a young boy in a wagon thing. And he was actually saved by an Indian woman who came and treated him. He was still alive with all the wagons were killed in his family, but she put salve on it, and he lived. And my grandfather would tell that story, and I would go like, "How could he be scalped and live? Tell me again! Tell me again!" And he had a lot of interesting stories.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just we kind of grew up listening, you know. And I read a lot, and you know, I
did. Your family collect books?
Oh yeah.
Bookshelves.
Oh yeah.
So what were some of the books you as a kid remember?
Robinson Crusoe.
Oh. Did you write stories as a kid?
No, I had to write essays for school. I went to a French Catholic school, and we had nuns. Essays were due every Friday.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I loved reading. I never really thought I'd be a writer, because I thought that was just kind of presumptuous, you know.
Right.
Read and enjoyed it.
Okay, so we move along through your life, and you became a teacher. You went to college, studied education, became a teacher.
First, I went traveling.
Oh.
Traveled for 4 years and lived in Europe and had some experiences there. And then I came home and you know, got my...
And then traveled around and then came back and then became a teacher?
Mm-hmm. Finished school and got my degree and credential and taught and worked for many, you know, Jewish Community Center, and then I worked for Head Start, the federally funded program. Yeah. I was working in Chinatown, and we'd get the summer off, and we could get paid. So I went back to Europe in 1984, and I hadn't been back for a long time. So that's when I heard this story about my friend who's Parisian who took me to the Marais, which...
Ooh.
If you remember, in the 1980s, was not like it is now. It was not gentrified. It was very funky.
Yeah.
And showed me where her mother had lived during the German occupation. And her mother was a hidden Jewish girl, 14 years old, and came home from school one day in 1942, and her family were gone. And she ended up living in this apartment, going to school, thinking, you know, that they were going to come back. And people didn't know then, you know, what we know. The concierge fed her a great risk to her own family, and using her own ration coupons for Sarah's mother. 1944, liberation, she went to the Hotel Lutetia, which had been Abwehr headquarters. Then they left, and the Red Cross took it over for people coming from the different camps and near Montparnasse Station, displaced people. And it's now, the Hotel Lutetia is like 4-star. But I was just in Paris, and it's closed down 2 years for renovation.
Uh-oh.
And they sold everything that was inside. It's so weird, and the ghosts that are there. But anyway,
I got to stop you here. So you're back in Paris with this friend who had this experience growing up, and she's showing you around her area, that part of Paris
where her mother lived. Yeah,
where her mother lived, and you're listening to these stories. Are you thinking about writing these as a story, or is it just, are you just fascinated by the story?
Well, I was walking on the streets where all this happened. I mean, thinking about, you know, people being taken and Nazis, and these were 17th century streets, and just all the history. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
I knew I was fascinated by that. I really was.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew her, and her mother was still alive, and there was more to the story, and I just thought, what about that? You know, just to these ghosts. There's so many in Paris. There's so many generations.
Yeah.
So I knew I was obsessed with, I mean, I always talked about it. I thought about it. I thought, I should write about that. I never, you know, too much going on. And then I had a child in 89. We went back to Paris in 93, I think. We did a house exchange in France. Had one night in Paris on the way back with my son when he was really small. And I remember I put him to bed. We stayed right in the Marais. We're in the Place de Vosges. I remember I put him to bed. I mean, now he's taller than I am. But anyway, and I went out down the Rue du Rosier looking for this building. I think I found it. I don't know. And I thought, my God, what? You know, I thought of Sarah's mother, and I thought, what if I had been a young mother in 1942? What would I have done to put food on his plate, you know, for us to survive, for us to live? What if you did something that came back to haunt you 50 years later? Because that was like, you know, 50 years after the war. And lots of things were hitting the fan in France about collaboration, about the past, because it was very much a closed area. People really didn't want to talk about the pain. And the, you know, it was very difficult. And who are we to judge? You know, so I was just obsessed. So I came home, and my dad was saying, you know, you're going to talk about that again? You're just going on it. I said, yes, I was there. And then my son got into preschool. I got into a writing class at UC Berkeley Extension.
Why?
Jim Frey.
Why did you get in writing?
Because my dad said, you need to write that down. I go, yeah, but, he goes, take a writing class. And then, so I got a babysitter. I could, you know, now I could have, and then he got into preschool. And then sometimes I would bring him to the class and he would crawl around on my friend always jokes about it. He used to crawl around under the seats, but I knew there was a story. I mean, it was an amazing story. But I knew I couldn't write just about the past in 1940 because, I mean, I was just getting a computer. I mean, there were no World Wide Web for me to research.
Right.
I couldn't be going to Paris all the time. You had to write letters. I mean, there was no way I could do a really accurate. But I was also really falling in love with Paris again in the 90s, and I started going back more because I love the contemporary Paris, you know. So I was like, why do I have to write about the past? Why can't I write about contemporary Paris, which to me was 93, 94, 95, and have a crime in the past that impacts this? And so, and my dad was saying, you've got to figure out how to write this. And I go, I know. And he goes, why don't you write it like a detective novel? And I was like, Nancy Drew, you know. But I mean, I was not into that. I said, I read that under the covers with a flashlight, you know. And he goes, no. And I said, it's all Agatha Christie. No. He was really into mysteries. And he said, you should read this one by P.D. James.
Ah.
Yes. And then I went, okay, I get it now. You know, these are novels. I mean, you know, there's psychology and sociological.
Yeah.
There's so much more, of course. And every novel is actually about a secret, right? Something that happened. And so I thought, okay, I could write a detective. And then I started to really like that structure and framework of a detective novel because it gives you a reason to investigate. And why this would happen. And you're following, you know, I needed a structure. And I liked the structure, you know, to tell a story, basically. And voila, long answer to your question.
No, that's what we're looking for. That's wonderful.
That's my life of crime. That's what happened. I don't know.
Okay, so now there's something missing here. So you're back in Paris and you're getting this idea. You read a novel. It gives you a great focus. And then you sit down with a pen and paper and write a story?
It was... I had to... I had to find my way into the story.
Yeah.
And I needed a protagonist, you know, a woman. I mean, yeah. I wanted a woman, a strong mm-hmm. woman, because this was the time of Sue Dunlap in Berkeley, Sue Grafton, you know, right. Sarah Paretsky. These were, they had kick-ass, you know, detectives who wore right. heels. And I was like, yeah, okay, why not? She can be French. No, I can't write it as a French woman. She could be half French and half American. You know, because I can't tie my scarf the right way. I don't know that. It's a special gene. But I had gone to this French Catholic school. I had, you know, my father was also a Francophile, and my uncle had lived in Paris after World War II. So there was, you know, this strange familiarity, even though I was always an outsider when I went there. But so I thought, okay, she could, okay, she's got to be half French, half American. And you have to develop the character. You have to do their persona. So where would she live? That's what we learned. Well, she'd live on the Île Saint-Louis, because that's where I would like to live. Okay, there. She'd have a dog, because, of course, you know, French women have dogs. And then, you know, you just... And then she would know she would never have a car. She'd have a bike or a moped, you know. And then it went on from there. What's open her purse? What's in her purse? Well, you know, the makeup. And she would have a gun that would fit into her clutch bag, you know, because the gun had to be able to fit. And she would be... I don't know. For me, it's not about, you know, the killing and the violence. Yeah. It's about that's what happens. That changes people's world and why she would be involved. Well, what could she be? Well, she could just be an actress. She could be the, what do you call it, amateur sleuth. You know, that's pretty, why are they going to solve crime? And then I was standing on the Rue du Louvre in Paris one day waiting for a bus and saw this sign, and it said, Du Louvre Detective. On Rue de Louvre, near the Louvre. And I went, well, hey, maybe if she's going to be, maybe I should talk to that woman, you know, that detective, which was run by a woman,
yeah.
Madame Barre, who I just saw the last time in Paris, and very nice, and yeah. I visit her. And anyway, so I went and met her. She inherited it from her father, who inherited it from his grandfather, family business, and I shamelessly stole her history and gave it to my detective. So Amy has this inherited this agency. She is a PI, but her father was killed in this mysterious bomb explosion. She's turning it from criminal investigation to the new thing in the world, computer security. Because yeah. in 93-94, you know, this was, there were, and then I read an article from the San Jose Mercury about computer security. I remember it caught my eye. I was like, wow. Three firms existed in the U.S. This was maybe 94, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Three only, because this was all new. One of them was run by a woman. So I found her. She'd moved up to Seattle, and I just said, and she agreed to let me interview her and talk to her, like, what is it? You know, bare bones stuff. So it's real, you know. So I thought Amy would have this cutting-edge new skill, which at the time was pretty new, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, she'd be licensed, and she get pulled into murder all the time, but you know, she would be using her computer security skills. She needed a partner. Then I pulled in Renee, who'd be a hacker, and he's also a dwarf, and so the, you know, the repertoire built up. But here she was, she had a reason to do this, she was experienced, she had these new cutting edge facilities. So then I could go and explore a crime, present day murder in Paris that led to a crime during the German occupation. That's a long answer, but
no,
I needed to come up with who these people are in this world of hers.
Yeah,
you know, which took a fair bit of time. It was, you know, but it was, how would she be? How would she be involved? How
did you map all this out on paper and pencil with Venn diagrams and lines and stuff?
I might have. I can't remember. I remember trying to do family trees.
Yeah,
you know. And I did write it. I mean, I wrote many drafts of the book, and in one of, I mean, I killed off generations of people,
yeah.
you know, that were just backstory. But I think as a beginning writer, you never know that. You,
yeah.
you've got to make the backstory of of these people, and people that may never even be on the page, but you've got to know it. But it doesn't mean it needs to go on the page. It took me 3.5 years to write, and I got in a critique group, and I'm still in a critique group. And I, what did I do? See, this was, you know, it's different now. I mean, yeah. you know, this was 95, well, I don't remember. It got published in 99. So what my husband, who owned a bookstore, said, you have a book that's set in Paris. You need to go and see where your book go to a bookstore and see where it would be on the shelf and see who publishes it.
Yes.
Now, in this time, maybe this was 96, 97, there was no Stieg Larsson, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There were, I mean, Da Vinci, I mean, this was way before. People were not reading, okay, there was Robert Ludlum, I guess, and John le Carré, but there weren't this huge...
spy things.
Yeah, and so there weren't a lot of foreign-based mysteries. But there was one publisher, Soho Press, who did foreign-based crime. That was their niche. And I had read, actually, one of the authors who I really liked.
Yeah.
And they took unagented submissions, so I queried them. And they asked to see 40 pages, and then they asked to see some more, and then I didn't hear anything, and I thought, oh, okay. I didn't have an agent, and I was like, okay. Yeah. And then they called me and said, is it still available? And I'm going, of course. You know, we should have been. I don't know. But, so they approached me, and we worked it out. So, you know, I'm not saying that's normal, but...
No, of course, no.
Yeah, it's just the way it happened with me. So...
Yeah, okay, so there you get this phone call that says, can we publish it? Did you feel like you were 10 feet tall and... on Mount Olympus, or
no? I thought they were going to find out who I was. Just this mom in Noe Valley with a kid, and what is she writing about Paris for?
Yeah.
My Jim Fry, you know, said, you know, now you're in a different. This is different now. It's business now.
Yeah.
You need to do the business side, which means you have a commodity. You need to be professional and. And if you don't have an agent, hire an agent or an entertainment attorney to read the contract, you know, just to know. And there's an agent in San Francisco who agreed to read it, you know, charge me for an hour. So it was fine. You know, I mean, I was going to sign it no matter what she said. But, and we just agreed to stay in touch. So that was it. And then later, I don't know, I saw her again and she said, do I understand it right? You don't want an agent? And I said, well, I don't know. And she goes... let me take you to lunch. So she became my agent. And I did not know that I was writing a series because after...
You weren't thinking that way at the time.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Neat.
And then when the book went in and the editor said, well, where is Aimé Le Duc going next? And I said, what? Well, you know that man she met and her dog and Renee, you are writing a series, aren't you? And I said... of course I am.
Yeah, right.
What is it, 14 books?
14, just sent in number 15.
Wow.
You've got this book going, you've got this agent going, and now you have a new career that is evolving in front of you. But it didn't happen overnight, right?
Mm-mm. Not at all. It's a very long time in the making.
Yeah. And... your second book, anything unique about it, the making of it? No.
Well, my editor said, like, where's Aimé going? And I said, how about Belleville? Now, Belleville, this is before the triplets of Belleville and all this. And she goes, where's that? And I go, oh, you know, Edith Piaf sang in the streets there and, you know, Père Lachaise. She goes, okay. So, and the only reason I picked that was because I was staying with a friend there.
Yeah.
And her daughter was the same age as my son, so sometimes I'd bring him and, or I'd, you know, when I went by myself, take her daughter to school or pay her gas bill. So I was seeing this whole other side. This was not the touristy part of Paris, you know. Mm-hmm. Belleville is very heavily ethnic, pretty edgy. It's really changed so much. I was just there.
Unbelievable, nasty history, too.
Yeah, but now it's very trendy.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but, so, I mean, I was like, okay, I should write about this, and... I don't know. It was something that, and I said to my friend who lives there, how can I write about this place? She goes, you go down on the Boulevard de Belleville on market day, you go sit at the outdoor cafe, you drink mint tea, and you write down everything you see that goes by. And I did just that. And I remember I wrote it in my notebook, and it's actually in Murder in Belleville. It's actually there, the paragraph, word for word, as I wrote it in my notebook. That's the only time nothing has ever been edited. But it's like, that literally came from what I saw on that street in my notebook, because that's the way it was. You know, that's what I was seeing. And so,
you've given hints here about how you conduct your writing, how your writing regimen. you sit in cafes drinking coffee and taking notes about people who walk by. Is that it? Is that all you do?
Oh, no, I take cops out to lunch.
Ah.
In Paris, yeah. I take the fleeks out to lunch and I buy them wine and then I buy them more wine and they talk. And
yeah.
I can't always take notes, you know, because then it interrupts the flow, but I'll tape record them or I'll just remember and write it down later. But I meet cops, I take...
Now, you're well known by the police in Paris now, but you don't have an ankle bracelet on.
No, I don't. Actually, every time I go, I get to meet new people. I met a forensic doctor who testifies in court this last time. I went to he invited me for dinner with a bunch of cops, which was totally cool. This
Ooh,
was a big deal.
Yeah.
I was pretty amazed.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, well, how can we help you? You know, and I'm like, you're so helpful. Why? And he goes, we want you to get it right. You know, that's
nice.
What a murder in the Latin Quarter. Uh-huh. That actually came from this man I know who was in charge of the Brigade Criminelle, you know, the homicide squad.
Right.
I'd known him for 3 years until I found out that he was in charge of the Princess Diana investigation.
Oh.
But I mean, I knew him 3 years. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I'm like, where are my interviewing techniques? So a lot of times from cops, I'll get the ambience or the, you know, what kind of crimes were going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always use those crimes. Or it's to flavor and to make it realistic. And I run a lot of things by them. And I say, this is not police procedural. But could this happen? Did you do it? Would it be plausible? You know? And a lot of times they'll say no or yes or you're too complicated. We just, you know. But I like to run it by them, so
yeah.
It's not a glaring error, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pigalle, the newest book, was suggested by a crime that they told me about.
How do you normally write? Do you work on a computer? Do you
mm-hmm.
work on yellow pads?
Yellow pads, yes.
Yeah.
I have a computer. My
yellow pads.
Yellow pads. I make. I don't really want that, but I make. Butcher paper, kind of.
Yeah.
When I get to about, I have to find a place in Paris that I feel is important, that I want to write about, that
mm-hmm.
I'll spend a year writing about, an area maybe I don't know well, but that I want to learn about.
Uh-huh.
I feel that I could, you know, it intrigues me. Then what kind of crime Amy would be investigating, and then once I have the place, then I start just working on why she would be involved, what crime would be organic to this area, what she would be, you know, why she would be called or be involved. And then I start from there, and I try to get to a really rough draft, about page 100.
Uh-huh.
And then if I feel I have a story, then I start to timeline it out. I put some paper on the wall, and I go, okay, Monday.
But after you've gotten to roughly 100 pages, interesting, that's neat.
Because then, you know, I change it around, too.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
maybe it doesn't work. You know, maybe I have different characters. I have Amy and Renee. And
right.
and then he couldn't be there on Monday if he was here on Tuesday or something. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I can see big picture stuff and pacing. It helps with pacing.
Yeah.
And continuity.
Yeah, that helped, yeah. And I do change that around a lot. But, yeah, I have to feel there's really something there. And then I show it to my critique group. But we only do like 30 pages at a time, so I kind of then I feel, but I feel I got something, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I think if I show it too early, I just don't. It's like spinning your wheels. I need to move ahead and often
yeah.
to find the story.
That's exciting. Have you continued to read, or did you give up reading when you were a child?
Books?
Yeah.
No, I read all the time.
Oh. Do you
yeah.
have any? I mean, are you reading mysteries, or you get out of that genre sometimes? And
I read everything. You know, but now looking, you know, working, getting ideas for a new book, I'm reading a lot of nonfiction
uh-huh.
about Paris and about biographies of people, and you know, at that time, at a certain time, or historical figures, or novels about that set during that time.
So you continue reading, you're continuing writing, you work, you have a new book out now, and. Are you already looking ahead?
I had a book come out in March,
yeah.
and then I turned in the next one
okay.
for hopefully next March, and I've started on the next one. I'm behind.
You're behind?
Yeah, I'm behind.
Right. That's hard to imagine with 14 books under your belt there.
Well, usually I have a book come out in March, and I have to get, you know, I mean,
yeah.
With my publisher, Soho, who I really, really, I've been with them the whole time, and I have never had experience with another publisher. So, and I've had my first editor was with me for 10 books until she died. She was one of the co-founders of the publisher. So, I mean, I had the wonderful, wonderful experience of a person who taught me so much and was a really rolled up her sleeve, red pencil editor, you know, really amazing. And now I have a great editor, too, who, you know, is different. But so, I mean, I know a very little in the publishing. You know, I mean, I have friends who have different experiences, but I've always been with them. And it's a wonderful fit.
Do you ever have someone come up to you, and we hear this one all the time from writers, that people come up and say, I have the best idea for a bestseller, will you write it for me?
Well, I get that. I get variations on that, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But if you have somebody who does have the promise of being a decent writer, what do you tell them?
I say come. Every summer there is a writing conference at Book Passage, which is in Corte Madera and Marin. And I went to the first two, Book Passage Mystery Conference. I will talk about mystery. And it's a great independent bookstore. This conference has been going on for 19 years. I went to the first two. And I really, you know, I didn't get published right away, but I credit it to, you know, the support and what I learned there. Because it's about going, and I just did a workshop, a setting workshop. I do a lot of workshops on setting and sense of place. I just did one over in Book Passage. And there was someone in my class who said, I have this idea, will you write it or write it for me? And I go, you know, I can't, but, you know, and it's your story. But, you know, here's where we are. This is your, you need to get the tools and techniques to think about how you, you know, it's about framing it. I think a lot of times we don't know how to get into the story. And, you know, that's a big issue of launching point. You know, where do you enter the story and how do you get there? And I think that was always a problem for me, and I think it is for a lot of people. You got the story, but get into it, you know, and get right there in the middle of the action and move on. But come to this, go to workshops, you know, like this one, go to this conference about writing, because I get something every time I go, even though I go and I'm on the faculty now, I listen and I go, yeah, why didn't I think of that? Or, you know, it just helps open your mind and be open to other ways of looking at your story, too. I think it's real important to have your work edited by other people. And not everybody agrees, but I think if you send it to New York, or even if you get it self-published, I have friends who self-publish or been traditionally published and now go through e-publishing. Mm-hmm. They always have their stuff read by a professional editor, because you need another set of eyes on it, I think. You know, just to make sure everything, you know, they're not wearing a leather pants here and a, you know, something else, or many other, you know, things. I think sometimes it's about, you know, seeing what the story is. It's just writing is not, it doesn't mean it's something people want to read.
Do you keep journals?
Mm-hmm.
For personal journals, or just strictly for your own writing?
Well, my notes in Paris. And I go to flea markets in Paris, and I buy things. I buy old photos. I buy little things, like maybe this is Morbier's wallet. I like to have tactile things. I come home and look at, and I have lots of photos, and I make maps. I buy maps. I trace Amy's route on a map. That's what I do, too, around page 100. I go on the map, and I go, well, she'd be here. And I want, you know, during the course of the story, she would go here, here, and here. How does she get here? What is she looking for? I love that, you know, for her, and I plot her way out to go there. And I have physical objects, things from the flea market, you know, people would have or touch or old. And these are all over, you know, these are the metro ticket. I mean, you know, just constant things that are in your pocket. And, you know, I digital record. Things when I'm sitting in the cafe or on the street, just so I get that sound and I'm back there and I remember being in that cafe or walking down that street. And what I mean, because I can't write everything down, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's right, it was that day when the clouds were like this and these men were unloading that and the dog came barking, and you know what I mean? It for me, that brings a lot of, takes me to that street in Paris, mm-hmm. and I'm there because I have to. My job is to yeah. take you with my detective to that street and feel that and smell it and taste it and textures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, we don't have enough texture in books.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one to get down, too.
I was just going to say that this one, you've got a scene where there is a...
Which one?
The Murder in the Latin Quarter, where there's a full moon, and you talk about the shadows cast by the trees on the street. And it is such a strong image of, wait a minute, it's night. How could there be a shadow? And then you're talking about the full moon, and it's like, oh, I see that. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I can't always have the globe streetlights.
Yeah,
there have
right.
to be other ways of...
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So there you are, unfortunately, on this plane. It's going down. It's going to crash. You're going to be the only survivor on a desert island, and you're only allowed to take the collected works of some writer with you. Who would that writer be?
Oscar Wilde.
Ah, nice.
I'd cry, I'd laugh, I'd do many
yeah.
things.
Yeah, that's cool. That's great. Is there anything that you want to add? I mean, basically, we've covered all the things that we hope to hear, and you've been incredible. It's so wonderful. Is there anything you can add that you'd like to mention?
There's something people haven't, even though I, you know, people read the books and they tell me, I've read all your books and this and that, and they'll say, oh, you need an accent here. You need, I'll go, fair enough, I mean, sometimes. But one thing no one's ever commented on is that in every book, I think, maybe one, I forgot, I always have a quote from Oscar Wilde, and no one has ever pointed that out. Or someone will paraphrase, Oscar, I mean, I don't have it,
yeah.
There's a paraphrase, or as Oscar Wilde would say, and I thought, that's really interesting. No one's ever said that, not that they read them in order, or they, mm-hmm. you don't have to sit and read them all, but I always thought that was interesting. People say, and I'm like, no one's ever picked that out.
What's your favorite Oscar Wilde quote?
Oh, there's so many. What's the one? Life is never fair, and for us, we're fortunate it isn't, or something like that. I don't know.
He
has some really good ones. I'm really off the top of my head. Can't remember.
Well, again, Kara, this has been fantastic. We really want to thank you.
My pleasure. I hope it's...
That's great.
Helpful.
Oh, yeah. I can guarantee it.